Hey everyone, welcome to the Balanced Dietitian podcast. I am your host, Marie-Pierre, and for all my English friends out there, you can call me Marie. I am a registered dietitian with a background in psychology. My passion in life is to help individuals heal their relationship with food and their bodies. If you're tired of dieting and tired of restriction, you are at the right place. I'm hoping that this podcast will help and support you as you heal your own relationship with food and your body, and give you the tools, the resources, and the knowledge that you need to finally ditch the diets. Every week, you will be hearing from guest experts and myself on all things food, body, and mind. I am so happy that you're here, and I cannot wait to support you on your journey. Let's get started. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to the podcast. How are you doing today, my friend? I am so happy that you are here to listen to this podcast episode. I think you are going to love it. So this week on the podcast, we are inviting Rebecca, a licensed therapist practicing from a health at every size perspective and an intuitive eating approach. Rebecca helps people who are high achievers, type A, perfectionism, go down to type BE, where we are more chill, but we still get shit done. She has two small children who keep her on her toes, and she's like passionate and determined to not inflict any type of body image challenge on her daughters. I'm so excited to have Rebecca here on the show because today we're going to talk about being a perfectionism and how that impacts actually like our body image and how we can start slowly unpacking this tendency. And a lot of us, I think, who are perfectionism, you know, have this idea that like, but like being perfectionism, like, or being type A has helped me be so successful. Like, I don't want to let go of that. It's part of my identity. So I think this conversation is going to be really interesting in how we can actually still be successful, still do all the things without putting so much shame and pressure on ourselves. If you are ready, let's start this episode. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Balanced Dietitian Podcast. We have a fun guest for you today. So today we are welcoming Rebecca, who is a health at every size aligned psychotherapist. I am so happy that you're here. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yay, of course. I'm really excited about this conversation too. I think this, we're going to talk about perfectionism today. And I think this is something that comes up a lot with this audience. So I think this is going to be really awesome. So let's get started and just, yeah, tell us more about you. How did you get to do the work that you do today? Who is Rebecca?
Well, that's quite the question. So I decided that I wanted to be a therapist in high school, actually, because I had been to therapy pretty consistently since I was small. My parents went to marriage counseling. I went to therapy to deal with transition stuff. I definitely had an eating disorder when I was in middle school, and it turned into like obsessive exercise when I was like trying to move my way out of that. And then I met a colleague who was also a therapist, and she was HAZE aligned, so healthy at every size aligned. And she considers herself to be a fat activist. And she just like blew my world open. And I thought she was amazing. And she taught me all about intuitive eating. And then I started really leaning into intuitive eating, intuitive movement, you know, body acceptance. And I realized that I wanted to make sure that I was providing that type of perspective for my clients as well. So it sort of shifted the clients that I was working with. And I noticed, I started seeing a pattern in the people that I was working with that many of them had complex like relational trauma from when they were little. Lots of sort of abandonment, neglect, feeling alone, feeling invisible. And that leads to a lot of self-criticism. It leads to a lot of like people-pleasing and imposter syndrome, perfectionism, and many of my clients are in recovery from disordered eating. So there's a little bit of a pattern there.
There's definitely a little bit of a pattern there. Yeah, to see, being able to see like all of these like character trait that kind of lead to disordered eating and feeling like, well, if all of this is insane, maybe I can control food. Maybe I can control my body. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing your story and how you decided to do this work that is so, so important. We don't meet a lot of health at every size aligned therapists or dietitians in this world.
Yeah, I've noticed that there are not as many of us as I would prefer.
Right? I mean, like, I feel like when we meet each other, we're like, hey!
Yes.
Can we be friends?
Yes.
All right, so let's get into the subject today. So talking a little bit more about perfectionism, can we just start by, like, really understanding like, what that means? What is perfectionism?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think if you were, you know, you're asking me, so it's obviously going to be like my filter here, but the way that I look at perfectionism is someone who is very, very focused on getting everything exactly right, doing all of the things all of the time. So it's, they don't just allow themselves to focus in one area. A lot of the time they're holding themselves to excessively high standards across the board in their lives. So relationships, finances, work production, you know, like keeping the house clean, the type of parent that they are, it just shows up in all of the spaces in their lives. A lot of the time I see perfectionists like running through previous conversations or things that they did earlier in the day or earlier in the week and just ruminating and sort of torturing themselves about, oh, I can't believe I did it like that. I should have done it like this. Or I can't believe I said this thing. I should have said this other thing. So there's a lot of ruminating, a lot of beating ourselves up and asking ourselves to do something that is just inhuman. It's just not really possible for human people to do.
Mm-hmm. And where, like, I think that's amazing how to describe it is like holding yourself to these like really high standards that are perfect and how we want to be. Sounds like there's a little bit of an all or nothing within that too, right? That
very, very
either
much.
This yes. or then not. And where does this like tendency come from? Like, have you seen any type of, like trend that like, oh, most people who are perfectionism, it comes from this, or like, how do we become like so hard on ourselves in those ways?
Yes, I love that question. And I think there are a couple different ways that this tends to develop. So oftentimes when people ask me what my specialty is as a therapist, I'll tell them I specialize in complex trauma. And again, what I mean when I say complex trauma is developmental or relationship trauma, attachment trauma. So caregivers being either very like unreliable and volatile or just emotionally absent and negligent. And so what ends up happening is the child, like, you know, children developmentally, it's completely appropriate to have something we call magical thinking. That's like, don't step on a crack or you'll break your mother's back, like all of that ridiculous stuff, right? But it's really developmentally appropriate when we're little to feel that way. And it's also developmentally appropriate to feel like everything is your fault or about you or your responsibility. Now we take that together with the fact that when we're small, we're completely dependent on our caregivers, right? So if our caregivers are not up to the task of caregiving appropriately, right, we're not going to say, oh, my mom is like incapable of doing this thing, or there's something wrong with my mom's parenting style. If you're 4 years old, you're going to say, I'm not good enough for my mom to take care of me well. I'm not important enough for my primary caregivers to be able to show up for me the way that I need and want them to. And so what ends up happening is we start to lean into tiny, tiny details. I sometimes talk about this as like the superpower of complex trauma, right? As you become super hypervigilant and like highly, highly attuned to people's emotional fluctuations, you're noticing things like, oh, they like cocked their eyebrow and like turned their body like 5 degrees, you know, this way. And so that must mean that danger is coming. So I can see that I need to adjust the way that I'm behaving or the way that I'm being so that I can make this person happy or I can avoid, you know, disaster, whatever disaster means in that family system. And when you follow that through development, it starts becoming very globalized because obviously the chaos is not going to stop, but just because you are eating a certain way or getting certain grades or keeping your room a certain level of clean. And so when you feel like, okay, I'm doing it to this degree and like mom is still, you know, mean to me sometimes or avoids me sometimes or doesn't take care of me. So I need to like step it up and step it up and step it up. And then we have our lovely friend perfectionism, you know, when it's all grown up, and it's totally unconscious. Like a lot of the time people don't even notice what it is that they're trying to control with it.
That's such a great way to explain it too, and where it all comes from. And it's so deep, so deep rooted from a lot. And like, I think it's really cool the way you explain it. It's like, just like almost with a compassion of like, where does it come from, to be like, it makes so much sense. And it sounds like it's like a way to protect ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's a way to feel empowered, right? And feel like you have some control over your circumstances. It's completely like untenable to experience ourselves as not getting our needs met and not being able to do anything about it. And so in order to feel like, you know, I have any control over my circumstances whatsoever, then we have to believe, well, it must be because I'm not trying hard enough.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that is so, yeah, so true. And I think a lot of people who are listening to this can definitely relate to that feeling of like always feeling like they need more. But it often too, I don't know if you see that too, is like when you reach that point that you think like, oh, and this will be good. When I get there, this will be good. Then you get there and you're like, fuck, this is not good. I need to do more.
Yes, absolutely. I talk about it sometimes as like, there's a little bit of a connection here between people who have like OCD tendencies. It's compulsive, right? And I talk about it as like, it feels like a black hole sensation. So like for me, and for many of the clients that I work with, it feels like a collapsing sensation or like a sucking sensation in the center of your chest. And it's like, you're throwing like reassurances into your chest to try and feed it or to try and fill it up. Like, I'm going to do better. I'm going to do better. I'm going to do better. But it never feeds it. It's a black hole. It's eating everything that you're throwing into it. And so it's never really going to be enough. You're never going to sate that need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when we think of, you know, the disordered eating and the body image work that we do, how does that perfectionism trait really tie into that?
Oh, yes. as you might imagine, right? Perfection, you know, body image stuff is one manifestation or one arm of perfectionism. It's one place that we can get hyper-focused, hyper-aware, and feel like we need to over-control. And it is, you know, lots and lots of people with any kind of disordered eating or body image stuff, right? It's something that they feel like, you know, if my world is completely chaotic and everything is totally crazy, and there's nothing I can do about any of that, but like I can control this, I can do this, right? You can see changes. And I think that gets really, it's almost like gambling, you know, when I do this thing, I can see this outcome. And so we're just doing the thing more and more, whatever the thing is.
Yeah. And I think like on top of that, then we live in diet culture that then validates that change of like, oh, and now you get so much validation because your body changed. Like, yes. Oh, now you lost weight. Like, oh my God, you're so great. You're so wonderful. So like this cycle just gets like.
Yes. And it feeds the invisibility. I can't even tell you how many people I have talked to who say things like, you know, I was in like the throes, like the worst part of my disordered eating. And like my parents, my friends, like people who are supposed to be paying attention to me and love me, like they were complimenting me. And how invisible that makes people feel. Like I'm in pain. Like, I'm not fucking okay. And you're like my parent and you're supposed to notice that I'm not okay. And here you are telling me how great I look. Like, it's just, it's awful. It's awful. And then you experience yourself as like, I am nothing but this shell that people see, right? It really like reinforces that chasm of like, I don't get to be a person. I'm just this like little placeholder that like everybody wants to look a certain way.
That is like so powerful. I like how you said that you feed the invisibility.
right? Because you're like, well, I'm not doing well, but all you can see is the extent. And it's like all because we're all so focused on bodies, right? Like since the time that we grow up and we're all told that like, hey, your body needs to be like attractive and all these things. And that's what we focus on. But when you're going through that and you're like, I'm not okay. And people are complimenting you. You're like, well, I guess it's fine then. It's okay if I'm not okay. At least I got this.
Yeah, it's awful.
It's so awful. It's so hard. So we can really see like that link between like a lot of people who develop the disordered eating or poor body image issues typically have that tendency of being perfectionists, right? That they want to be, they want to achieve this degree because we're also told that like a thinner body is like, well, that will give you more value in your society. And why wouldn't we not want that?
Right. And we feel like we need that if we don't already value ourselves, right? If it's like, I know that just being me is not enough and never has felt like enough. And so if they're saying that people might see me or give a shit about me if I do this thing, then like, why wouldn't I do the thing?
Mm-hmm. And do you think, I don't know if this is a good question or if it's a question you can even answer. I almost see like the chicken and the egg type of thing. Do you think like perfectionism tendencies come first and then we have like self-criticism that like it's really high, or it starts with like we're really, really self-critical that kind of leads to being a perfectionist?
That's an interesting question. I think in my head, the way that it usually develops or the way that I usually see it develop is almost like simultaneously, like it's almost in tandem, because the self-criticism is a tool to get better, or that's how we perceive it, right? We think of it as a tool to get better or to do better or whatever. So it's like we experience ourselves as lacking, and then we decide that the way that we're going to handle that is to be really mean to ourselves so that we can get a little bit better. And then it's still not good enough. So then we're even meaner to ourselves to get a little bit better, and so on and so forth. So does that make sense?
Yeah. I like how you put it forward. I never thought about like self-criticism as being a tool. Mm-hmm. Like that's a really cool way of seeing it. Like it's maybe not the most adaptive tool in that we don't really love it.
Certainly not.
But if you are a perfectionist and you're like, I need to get to the next level, shame is a good short-term driver. So shaming yourself to get there does seem. And where do we learn that? Where do we learn that like shitting on yourself nonstop is the way to do it?
Honestly, I think it's like I think it's just that we're so young when this develops. Like usually we're like what, 2, 3, 4 years old when we start these processes. And so like the best tool that we have available to us when we're put in untenable situations, when we're tiny, is like, well, I don't know. I don't have the skills, right? Like I'm supposed to be keeping this entire family like stable and happy and whatever, so that like mom will go fucking to work and we'll be able to have food on the table or whatever. And so if that's my job and I feel like I'm too small to be able to do it, then I think it just sort of naturally like we develop a little toddler inside that's like, okay, well, I'm just going to tell you your fuck up until you save the family.
So difficult. And do you have any tips or first step for someone who's like identified, like, yeah, I'm 100% a perfectionist. Like it's been this way. Our self-critical voice is super high, but to start like breaking down, I guess, those tendencies of like, how can we go from all or nothing perfectionist to maybe not, maybe more intuitive? Like, how do we start this process?
Yes, absolutely. So I think there are a couple things here, and I think there are a number of different ways to look at it. But the first thing is, or I guess the overarching sort of sweeping goal here, right, is going from perfectionism, which is very like goal oriented and product oriented, and it's like, I want to achieve X, to process oriented. So it's trying as much as possible to engage with mindfulness in such a way that it gives you permission to be where you are when you're there, experiencing whatever you're doing, rather than focused on whatever outcome it is that you're trying to get from it. So that's like, that's our goal. That's what we're trying to get to, right? And in order to do that, we're sort of working from both ends. So on one end, we're like practicing the mindfulness, even if it's just a couple seconds at a time. It's like when you're eating or in the shower or outside or in the bath, like taking a couple seconds to just, what does this feel like? Do I like it? How do I know that I like it? Right. And you're going to lose that like immediately. And then you're going to have to bring yourself back. But every single time you bring yourself back, it's like, you know, you're doing an exercise to reinforce that muscle, right? So every single time you're bringing yourself back, you're getting stronger in that space. The other side of that is that we have like the really hypercritical voice that's going on. And we definitely want to be interacting with that. So one thing that I hear all the time that super frustrates me about how to deal with like the inner critic, because I have my experience and anecdotally is that it actually makes it worse, is people will say like, well, argue with it, or like tell it to fuck off, or like lock it in a, you know, put it, throw it out the window or whatever. And so like people will tell you like be mean to the inner critic, but the way that we just talked about it, like the inner critic is you when you were three, right? This is a tiny little version of you. It's a little person who's doing the best that they can poorly. Look, I would not let my three-year-old like run the show. Like in no way, shape or form should she be doing that. So like they don't have the skills to do it, but they're trying, and they're trying really hard. So when you argue with it, what you're doing is you're creating a power struggle. So the critical voice is like, oh, like you're such a piece of shit, like you're ugly and terrible and whatever. And you're like, no, I'm not. I like totally got an A on like this past, you know, math quiz or whatever. And then the critical voice ups the ante and like, well, that's because, you know, you cheated, or it was fake, or that test was like super easy and so it doesn't count, right? And then you just get into more and more absurd territory as the argument continues to go on. So first of all, it doesn't help. Second of all, it actually makes the critical voice louder, because you're arguing with it. You're giving it the wrong kind of attention. Now on the flip side of that, like throwing it out the window or being mean to it, think about this like if it were an actual child. Like if you take a child who needs something from you and you lock them in a room, do you think they're going to get more quiet, or do you think they're going to get louder? Mm-hmm. My experience has been that they get louder. And so we want to attend to the needs of that part of yourself, which means like, honestly, self-soothing. It's like taking care of that part of you as though it were actually a small child. So like when my three-year-old doesn't want her teeth brushed, I don't say like, oh, okay, sweetheart, like we'll just let your teeth rot out. But I also don't like jackhammer the toothbrush into her mouth, because that's mean and like abusive. And so we have to find like a little bit of a middle ground. Like, I understand that this is really uncomfortable for you. I understand that you really don't want to. It matters to me that you don't want to. I'm going to be here with you the whole time. What can I do to make this easier? What can I do to support you through this process? And that's the dialogue that we want to take to our inner critic.
I love that so much. I think it comes from understanding that like deep down, it's probably coming from a good place to try to protect us, and seeing as that of like just shutting it down. Like it always comes, it's almost like that, the balloon underwater, right? That you like push it down and just want it keeps bursting back, and you're like, okay, well, this is not useful. And a lot of us have been fighting with that voice for so long. So to be able to be like, all right, so this didn't work. What if instead we try a different way? And we see it like as like we lean into it, right? Like what we want to do, because it feels so uncomfortable, so hurtful, so painful. We want to run away. Like it makes sense, like human behavior, that we're like, this is not fun. Like, let's not stay in this spot.
Right.
But what we want to do is, instead of disengaging and like running, is like, can I lean into it? Can I like, all right, what do you need? What's right. coming up for me?
Yes. I love that. Yes. Absolutely. And I think the other part of it here is like, you know, just taking care of like all of you as a whole person. And like, I think that the sort of underbelly here that we don't acknowledge is that a lot of people are very attached to their perfectionism. Like a lot of people are actually incredibly attached to their inner critic. And they won't like say that because it's like a weird thing to say. And I think it feels a little bit uncomfortable, but they feel like if I don't have this, like there's something so terribly wrong with me that if I don't lean into my inner critic and let her run the show, then this is where like all my success has come from. This is the only reason that I'm okay. This is the only thing that's kept me safe.
This is so powerful. And I want us to lean in a little bit into that conversation because I do see that with disordered eating, body image, and even like this piece is like, at the bottom line, it's like, we don't trust ourselves. We feel like we need these like external or very shameful things to drive us into action or to make us do all the things. Right. And I've heard that too, of like, if I'm not a perfectionist, I won't apply myself and I won't be successful. Right. Or like my perfectionism tendency allowed me to do this and this and this. Mm-hmm. How do we start countering that? How do we start being like, okay, like it makes sense that our identity got like attached to it, but how can we slowly detach and I guess start the process of like, no, you can trust you to do these things without this mm-hmm. added shame stuff mm-hmm. that's come through.
Yes, absolutely. So, I mean, I think the first thing, and this is again, one of those sort of overarching things here, is like, we want to do it little bits at a time. So you're not asking yourself to all of a sudden one day flip and do a 180.
That's all or nothing.
It is not all or nothing. Yes. And, you know, that's not going to be sustainable. So we want to just allow, it's almost like negotiating with that part of yourself for little bits of empowerment and little bits of space at a time so that you can earn its trust. So you're trying to earn the trust of your inner critic. That's kind of the way that I look at it, is like, hey, if you give me like 5% control today, right? Do you feel comfortable giving me 5% control and watch what I do, right? I'm going to keep checking in with you. I'm going to listen to what it is that you need from me. And I'm going to do things, right? I'm just going to do them maybe a little bit more slowly and a little bit more nicely to myself. So that's like the almost theoretical way of talking about it. Like in the nitty gritty of like, okay, but what does that mean? And what does that look like? And how do I do it? Right. It's again, leaning into the space of mindfulness and noticing that there's movement in your body, right? I remember, so I took the first time I was really introduced to mindfulness, I took a whole mindfulness class in grad school. And it was a summer class. It was the only one I was taking, and it was like 4 hours a day. So I was meditating 4 freaking hours a day. And it was like, you know, I remember nearish the end of the summer, I was thinking like, oh, I do feel like much more zen and like I feel different and whatever. And then I had this moment of like, but how am I supposed to do this when I'm living life and have shit to do? Right. Like, okay. So I know how to be mindful when I'm like laying on my back on the floor. Right. Cool. That's great. But like, how is that going to, I still need to like live. I have things to do. Right. And I struggled with that for a while, actually, probably a couple of weeks. And I finally got to the space of like, when you are truly being present in your body and you're really paying attention, there's movement there. There's passion. There's like a pull towards things that are interesting to you or matter to you, right? And if you give yourself permission to lean into that, it will pull you towards doing work that is passionate, that you're passionate about, or spending time with your kids, or, you know, cleaning things up because it's bothering you that things are like a little bit messy or chaotic, but doing little bits at a time and allowing yourself to stay in the space of like, maybe you start doing the dishes and then you start realizing, I actually kind of hate this right now. I'm halfway through and it was fine up until now. I was listening to music. I was smelling the soap. We were good, but I'm kind of done. I'm kind of done with this. And letting yourself actually fucking be done, right? So it's this like moment to moment, like listening to whatever your body and your intuition is telling you.
I like that too. And it's hard. Like, I know I can only see, like, imagine the audience listening to this and being like, all right, okay, we can do this. Like learning back control, but it's so scary. Right. And I think like just allowing that space to be like, it's normal that like thinking about trusting yourself again feels icky, and even like tuning into your intuition may feel like, wait, what? Like, what yeah. are we talking about here?
Well, it's hard. I mean, and especially any kind of trauma gets us out of our body and into our brain, right? We start intellectualizing things. We start like looking at things like in a very like systematic way, and we're not connected to the feelings. And it makes sense, right? Because if you've experienced trauma, like your body wasn't a safe place to be. Like, why would you stay there and feel all that shit if you didn't have to? And so that again is a protective mechanism. And so the first step for most people in my experience is practicing coming down into your body. It's practicing paying attention and being more present in the rest of your body instead of just thinking about things. I've got clients that I'll ask them like, well, how do you feel about that? And they'll tell me what they think about it. And it's like, well, that is not, I mean, thank you. But also that's not what I asked. So like, how do you feel? Right. And mm-hmm. the question is like, how do you feel it in your body? How do you notice it in your body? Bringing yourself down just over and over again.
I love that. And I love that way you say it, because it brings back the, giving yourself that space to do it, right? That like, if it's, again, not all or nothing, so you're not going to become like intuitive tomorrow, but it's mm-hmm. allowing like spaces and time to start that connection. Right. And I think like, I love the way you've just worded it, like just the acknowledgement of like, okay, how has that been supporting me and how can I let go of it? And trusting that, like, I don't need to stay within this tendency to be successful, to continue to do all the work that I want to do. Mm-hmm. Right. And it feels like very like those like type A people, like, I got to do all of this all the time. And it's super intense. And you're like, oh, wait, no, we can yes. still accomplish things without being in that like high intensity vibe.
Yes.
Which feels scary, I think, for a lot of people.
It's super scary. I mean, if that's what you've been relying on to like move you forward and get things done, right? Like, then not leaning into that feels really terrifying. But it's also, I think it's important to recognize that like leaning into torturing yourself in order to do things makes it harder each subsequent time to do the thing, right? So if washing the dishes is some horrible fucked up chore because you're torturing yourself about it the entire time you're doing it, then next time it's time to do the dishes, you're not going to want it. Like, why would you want to do it? The last time you did it, it was fucking horrible. Right. So you're actually making it harder for yourself to do the things by torturing yourself about them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was going to ask, like, for someone who maybe is in the zone of like, still really holding on to the perfectionist tendency, being like, well, this is what is supporting me. What's the cost of like being a perfectionist? Like, what is there anything bad with being a perfectionist? Is there any cost to it long term?
I appreciate that question. I would say so, yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I would think that, oh, there's so many costs, but that I think the one that's probably the most concrete and the most tangible is relationships. Mm-hmm. When you are a perfectionist and you are constantly doing and you are constantly harping on yourself to do more and to do better, then even in the moments when you're trying to relax, you're not really there. You're not really relaxing. And so if like you have kids and your kids want time or attention or energy from you, you don't fucking have it. If you've got a spouse and they want to like laugh with you and connect to you and get to know you, you're not doing that. You can't be connected to other people and also constantly pushing and grinding and being mean to yourself. So like definitely relationships, energy, like there's no fun, there's no joy in life if all you're trying to do is like achieve some unrealistic standard, or really, if all you're trying to do is achieve, you don't get to exist, you don't get to be, you don't get to like experience life. Like something I've been saying to myself a lot more recently, because it's felt really powerful to me, is like, my life is happening now, like this right now, this is my life, it's happening. I want to show up for it. I want to be here. like, yes, I want to plan for the future. And yes, I want like things to, you know, maybe there are things that I want to be different or whatever. But like in the meantime, like me right now in this moment, I also matter.
Oh, this is so good and so powerful. I love that so much. Of like the here now, just it matters. It really does. And I think this is like a question of like, if I were able to talk to my younger self and be like, no, we don't need this. we don't need to be this mean. We don't need to that, right? And like, we don't need that to belong because you already do. This is so amazing. Thank you so much for your wisdom. I feel like everybody's going to get so much out of it. And so much like little actionable tips of like, how do we start this journey to like come back within, right? And this relationship with self is also super important, that when we are stuck and just listening to that 3-year-old inner voice in our head all the time, that like, it's hard to foster a good relationship with ourselves.
Yeah.
And that really matters too. Yeah. Is there any other tips that you want to leave for our audience today?
I think just the recognition that it's not going to be linear. So when you're making progress, like relapse is part of recovery kind of thing. Like it's not going to be a linear thing. So even if you feel like you've made progress, and then you feel like you're regressing or falling backwards, like that's part of it. That's part of it. So like making space and setting the expectations at the front end, like if I have a really good day, wonderful. That means that I can do that again. But it doesn't mean it's going to be like this consistently and just going up. So give yourself space to like celebrate and live in and like revel in the day that you created for yourself, without the expectation that it's supposed to be like this forever.
I love that so much. Love it. Thank you so much again for being here. Where can people find you?
Yeah, thank you. So I have my therapy website is BeccaNewkirkTherapy.com. And you can find my coaching. So like just the perfectionism, type A to type B, have fun and still get shit done, is BeccaNewkirkCoaching.com. And I'm also on Facebook and Instagram and YouTube. So you can find me in a bunch of places.
Awesome. And we're going to link all of that in the show notes, so you beautiful people can go find her and her genius. And I love, I love how much you swear too.
Yep.
This is how it is. This is how it is here. Awesome. So we're going to finish off with fun questions. So the first one is, what is your favorite food?
Oh my gosh, pizza. Easy.
Hey, pineapple on pizza or no pineapple on pizza?
You know what? I'm a fan of pineapple on pizza on occasion. And it helps that my 3-year-old prefers pineapple on pizza. So my husband can just suck it because he doesn't. He can get his own pizza.
There you go. There you go. If you could have one superpower, what would it be?
It used to be, if you'd asked me this when I was little, it would have been mind reading. And then if you'd asked me when I got, probably because I had like the perfectionist stuff and I was trying to stay safe or whatever, if you'd asked me when I was like a young adult, I'd probably have said like, to be able to like transport, like I'm going to be in France now, or like, okay, like in 5 seconds. But I think now, having just gone through some of my own life things as an adult person, I would want to heal people.
I love that so much. Love it. Awesome. What is your favorite way to self-care?
I like to do, I love exercising with kettlebells. They're like my favorite, like I'm angry and I'm just going to like throw this metal ball around thing. So if I have a bad day, that is a place that you can find me. Hot springs are like my jam. So there are like lots of hot springs around where I live, and the hotter, the better. Like if I feel like I'm cooking, that's probably perfect.
I love that so much. I'm also low key jealous that you have hot springs where you're at.
Yes.
That is awesome. And last question for you, because this is the Balanced Dietitian podcast. What does balance mean to you?
Balance to me means that you get to, that's a really, I love the way that you framed that. I think balance to me means that you get to have little bits of all of the things that matter. So you're not just leaning all the way in one direction. And if you do need to lean more in one direction, you get to compensate. So it's like flexibility and ability to adjust.
I love it. And so you were doing like a hand movement of like the back and forth. I like that. It feels very flowy. Yeah, we like it. Awesome. Thank you again so much for being here. I think the audience is going to get so much value out of this episode, and everything again will be linked in show notes so everybody can go find you and follow you and learn more from you. So thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Wasn't this episode just so wonderful? I loved talking to Rebecca. She is a wealth of knowledge, and I hope that you really enjoyed her as well. So all of her links will be in the show notes, so make sure that you go follow her and get all her wonderful content. On that note, my friend, I hope that this episode was helpful for you, that you've learned a lot. If you have been listening to this podcast and have been enjoying it, please, please, please leave us a review. So reviews really help us grow the podcast, but more importantly, it helps us spread this anti-diet, weight-inclusive, health at every size message. And this is my mission. I want to help as many humans as possible walk away from the shameful cycle of diets. So if you feel moved to do so, if you've been enjoying this podcast, I would love to hear from you in the review section on Apple Podcasts. All right, my friends, on that note, if you want more support, if you are looking for help, you can always reach out to me on Instagram at The Balanced Dietitian, or write me an email at info@thebalancedpractice.com. I look forward to hearing from you, and I hope you have a wonderful day.